Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Kansas City jazz veteran and talented bassist and composer Steve Ragazzi. We spent some quality time going over the story of his life that has been well-lived and quite interesting. He originally was playing the tuba in the United States Air Force Band, then moved on into the bass. And that was the instrument that stuck. He retold tales growing up in Oklahoma and how that connection has proven big dividends in his life. He has been all over the globe playing jazz and has some great insights into playing in Italy for 6 years, along with playing with Chet Baker at that time. He's a big part of a thriving Kansas City jazz scene, a very cool cat, and one with a great story to tell. So dig it, my friends.
Thank you for taking a little time to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Are you kidding, man? This is such a gas. I appreciate you even thinking about me. This is really good, man.
No, this is great stuff, man. I had a great time with your bio. I'm really looking forward to digging in and getting into your musical underpinning. So let's start with the alpha here. And actually, not even the alpha. Let's start with just today. And what has been going on with you lately?
Well, you know, I've been very lucky, man. I've been playing with a lot of different groups. And for example, I had a rehearsal with a new group here in town called Interplay that specializes in like West Coast sextet type of stuff. And that's been a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, and I get to play with a lot of other groups, like A La Mode is one of my groups I play in. I love playing with them. And Pagarazzi, the Mike Pagan, Steve Ragazzi duo thing, it's some pretty wild stuff, actually.
Let me ask you this. The one thing I didn't get in your bio was, where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Oklahoma, actually.
Okay.
In southern Oklahoma. There you go.
So when you were growing up, what kind of fostered this love of music and more specifically jazz? Was it your family? Was it the area you grew up in? What was it?
You know what? A lot of it was my family because my mother is a musician. She's a pianist and organist, and we always used to sit around on Saturday afternoons, and she would bring out the sheet music, and we'd listen and sing songs and all that. But I was lucky enough to have an uncle that was a band director, and I started playing music with his high school band when I was in grade school, man. He would take me with his high school band. I was playing clarinet at the time, and he'd take me along with him, man, and I learned a lot from that. But as far as jazz goes, it was my dad. My dad played jazz constantly in the house, and therefore, the love of jazz came about, man.
So, was there an album that parted the proverbial jazz curtains? You were like, oh, my God, it blew your doors down.
You know, I would have to say at the time, it was Dave Brubeck, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say that it was the most interesting music I'd ever heard in my life. And especially, you know, what's funny about that is how times history repeats itself in a way, because he was like he was kicking it with odd meter tunes and bringing that to light and so forth. And it's really kind of funny because now that's come back around again too. You know, a lot of the a lot of jazz out there now is using the multimeter stuff and really kind of cool. You know, but that's what I was listening to, man. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, history is just one big carousel. Once you hop off, you hop back on, and you could get right back in the same place, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that way.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. So when you were a kid, did you dream about being a musician, or did you have other dreams when you were growing up?
No, to be honest with you, man, I didn't think about the musician thing seriously until I got into the Air Force, and I was in air traffic controller school at the time, and then they closed out the school because they had too many air traffic controllers, and so they offered me like three different gigs, man. They said you could either be a fireman, a policeman, or a musician, and that was a no-brainer for me, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of the jazz thing, and because I was a tuba player when I went in, and I got called in by my commander after about a year, asked if I knew anything about bass, and I said no. He goes, well, good, congratulations. Your first gig is in 6 weeks, and you need to go and check out a bass from Supply and start shedding, you know. So that was the beginning of it right there, man. You know, my first gig was all these cool, they were like all the stuff from the Buddy Rich Big Band library, you know, from the Big Swing Face album and all that stuff. And, man, that's some pretty hefty stuff to learn in 6 weeks. So
yeah,
to be honest with you, the first gig sucks, man. That's all that was true.
Yeah. Well, was that right after, did you go to Italy after that? You spent 6 years over there. Is that where you went after that?
No, after, you know, it was funny. I went from that particular station, which was Wichita Falls, Texas. And I didn't make it to Italy until 1980, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I'll get back to that, but I did want to talk to you about your formal music training under the tutelage of Cecil McBee in 1990. What was that learning under Cecil, that kind of formal education like?
Well, it scared the hell out of me, to be honest with you, because he's such an amazing player. And well, we had that Oklahoma connection because he's from Oklahoma. And when I was living in Boston, I went to NEC to listen to a big band one time, and I was talking to a friend of mine who was in the band, and he was talking about Cecil being an adjunct there. And so I immediately, man, hopped on that and took a couple of lessons there at NEC with him, and then I had him over at the house and cooked dinner for him, and we talked and got a lot of stuff out of the way, and then I had some more lessons with him, man, and he is and still is an amazing educator, but an amazing player too. So he really set me straight on a lot of things, because I didn't pick up the upright, man, until about that time, about 1990. I guess about 1991, 1990, something like that. And he set me in some directions there, man. Other than that, it's been self-taught all the way.
Right on. So in 96, you get your bachelor's degree from Southeastern Oklahoma State University. What was it like learning jazz in that kind of university environment?
Well, you know, the thing about it was that was an interesting thing for me, because I was the oldest cat there in the band. And, you know, but my main concern for going there was to get more, I needed to get more studies done with composition and theory and all that, because when I first came in the Air Force, see, the Air Force at the time didn't have any kind of I don't even know if they still do. I don't think they do. They didn't have a school of music like the Navy or the Marines and so forth. In the Army, they go to the Armed Forces School of Music in D.C. And with the Air Force, you really had to, when you auditioned, you had to know your stuff already, you know. And I felt when I first came in, you got to remember, it was during, it was the tail end of the Vietnam War. And so when I came in, man, there were like all these guys from, like, there was from the Buddy Rich Band or, you know, Steve Gadd, for example. Not Steve Gadd, Dave Garibaldi, the Tower of Power, was in the Air Force Band up in Seattle at the time. And so, you know, the minute the war ended, all these cats split to get back to their regular gigs because they were evading the draft to go to Vietnam when they did this. So there was a huge opening for musicians at the time. And I just happened to luck out, man, and deliver the goods on the bass thing, man, and shedded my tail off all the time about that. So,
yeah.
Did I answer the question at all? I don't think
you totally did. Yeah, you totally did. Yeah, yeah. I was just kind of filling in some biographical gaps. So what I'd like to do is go into your 6 years in Italy. Talk to me about how that came about and what that kind of experience would be like to play in another country for that long.
Well, you know, it was a great experience, to be honest with you, man. And the cool thing about it was, I got to play with international musicians, and in particular in Italy. You tour all over Italy, but also over the southern Mediterranean, and you get to play. I can remember playing some Turkish pieces, man. That was some wild time signatures there. And you know, the funny thing about being over in Italy is that the love of jazz is really amazing over there. It's not just Italy; it's Europe in particular. But I can remember my first experience of seeing Pat Metheny was over in Naples, Italy. And Pat and I talked about this not too long ago, that the amazing thing was when you walked into the concert, man, they were playing the music over the loudspeaker before the show started. And all the Italians are like singing these songs, man. And Pat was like knocked out by it. But that's just the way it was. It was an interesting, I got to play with all kinds, and that's how I hooked up with Chet Baker, as a matter of fact, was that particular assignment, you know.
So, what was that like to hook up with a cat like that?
It was scary, man. I was doing a TV show in Liguria, and I was in charge of the big band, the NATO big band at the time, and so we were doing, you know, all these. They wanted to hear Glenn Miller stuff and all the big band stuff from the 30s and 40s. So we worked that stuff out. But during the rehearsals, Chet's bass player got hung up like in Switzerland or France or someplace and couldn't make the gig. Mm-hmm. So here we go with the Oklahoma thing again. We had had dinner the night before, everybody had, and Chet and I were talking, and the next day, when his bass player didn't show up, he asked if I could do the gig with him, and I said yeah. So he was so kind to me, and I guess the best part about it was that after the show, and we did the show, he had about three more dates to do in Italy, and he asked if I could do it, so I had to take leave to go do it, but it was probably one of the most amazing experiences I had. You know?
Yeah.
Don't miss any changes with Chet Baker. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
Don't screw up the form, man. You know?
Yeah. I imagine
it'd be
so.
The first to tell you, you know.
That's great, man. So let's continue with this kind of lineage here of you traveling. There was a world tour in 2000 that took you to 9 countries and 3 continents. Talk to me a little bit about that journey.
That was a wonderful journey, man. That was with Joe Cartwright and Angela Hagenbach. And we auditioned through the State Department and the Kennedy Center. They have a program called Jazz Ambassadors. And they send certain groups around the world, man, to represent the U.S. and perform in third world countries. And it was... Wow, it was whirlwind, but it was also amazing, man. I got to play with so many cool musicians. I mean, classical Indian players, Palestinians, man. We had a kind of a jam / recording session with a Palestinian group, and that was amazing. And
yeah.
Played at. I can remember playing at the head school in Tel Aviv, and these kids were just amazing musicians, man. I mean, right on the money. And funny thing is, in Palestine, for example, on the West Bank, there's I don't know if you remember a jazz sax player named Arnie Lawrence from the U.S., but he relocated over in the West Bank and started a jazz school, and incorporated Arab and Israeli kids. And man, these cats could swing, man. I mean, they were really good. Arnie worked hard with them, and they were just wonderful to be around. Just wonderful, man.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. So let me bring it back here, since you've had such a good run and so many miles in Kansas City. Do you have any good, any fond memories of playing Kansas City over the years? I mean, what really kind of sticks out when you think about all the places you played and all the different gigs you played here in this town?
You know what, man? Kansas City is an amazing town for music, and I, you know, I've been really fortunate, man, to be a part of the Kansas City scene. Specific gigs. Wow, that's a tough one, man. You know, it's a funny thing, back in the day, and I say back in the day, maybe 10 years ago or so, when Jardine's was still open, for example, that was a fun time because I can remember playing with Joe Cartwright's Latin Jazz Quartet, and we had a steady run there, man, like every Friday night, and live music back then, with the advent of technology now, live music was a lot more, people went out more. I'll just put it that way. People went out to listen to live music more, and you could pretty well count who was going to be out there to do it. And plus, you got to remember, too, location, location, location. So it was always a party there, you know, fun pack type of stuff. And it wasn't just Jardine's. There were a lot of other places like that, too, man. But, now, specifically, I don't know. There was a time I did an Angela gig at Jardine's, and the great Clark Cherry came in because Angie and Clark were real good friends. And so I felt really good because Clark came in and he did mumbles. And I, you know, it doesn't get any better than that, man.
No, that's Clark nice. Yeah, are you kidding? Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, it always seems like in Kansas City, you know, I've noticed this over the past 5 years, and I'm sure this has been going on for a while. Bobby Watson has been kind of the one ushering in a lot of really good talent in this town. Talk to me a little bit about the talent that's going on in 2015 in Kansas City. How do you feel about the jazz scene?
Well, you know what? The jazz, yeah, and I got to say, I got to hand it to Bobby, man. Bobby is turning out some amazing talent out of UMKC. The problem I see with this right now is we have so many great players in this town and not enough places to play. That seems to be, it's unfortunate too, because, again, you're not, I could be wrong. I know that there's a lot of places, there's a couple of places I know of that are very fortunate to get people in, and that's a good thing, man. So I like the jazz scene a lot. To be honest with you, man, there's so many damn good players out there. These kids are way on top of this stuff, and that's a good thing too, man. You know, I don't have a chance to play as much as I'd like to with some of the younger players because I could probably learn a hell of a lot from them. And but I respect a lot of stuff they're doing. I'm just not hip to yet, and that's my problem, not theirs. I appreciate because everything's got to go forward, man, as far as music goes and so forth. And the funny thing about music is, you know, what's going on now is you've got a lot of really cool rhythmic and harmonic type of things going on. But the one thing I have missed is melodicism. So I'm not saying that it's not out there, but it's a totally different bag right now, and it's interesting to see how it's going to develop from where it's at right now, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening with that, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Let me ask you this. Who would you consider your jazz heroes?
Oh, well, let's see. That's a good question, man. One in particular, my favorite bassist is one that I know people go, that's all he talks about. No, Mark Johnson is one of my favorites. He's one that I followed since he was in college in North Texas with Bob Bowman. And so I follow Mark a lot. Bass players, for example. LOC, piano players, Eliani. You know, Eliani Elias is like one of my favorites. Bill Evans, of course, always my favorite. Wow. There's a lot of great cats coming out now, man. You know.
Yeah.
Pat Metheny blows me away, man, with his creative genius. I've said it before. If you want to hear Pat's genius, man, go check out some of his solo stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's totally amazing how he does that stuff. So I guess, some of my favorites, yeah.
Yeah, you know. That hits it. Let me ask you this. If you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see one jazz show, mm-hmm. what would be on your radar? What would you like to see live?
Okay. Wow, that's a good question, man. I think I'd like to go back and I was talking about this last night with the sax player in Interplay. You know, 1957 in the late 50s, man, was a great jazz time, you know. And I think maybe I would love to go back in time and go to that town hall concert, man. They had all the animals on, you know, Charlie Mingus and all these cats, man. I think I'd love to go back in time and just maybe just hang in New York City, man, about that time, and just because there's so much great music coming out of that place, and not just New York, but in L.A. too. So
yeah, right on. Yeah. So one thing that I have heard about you is that in one of your one line in your bio, it says you're as adaptable as a gecko in a rainforest. What does that mean?
Yeah, I know. Must have had a good glass of wine that night. Well, you know what, man? At the time that I wrote that, I guess it's because of all the different gigs and the different types of groups I've played with. You know, I say that in general because I do like to. I don't just stick with jazz. I mean, I play. As a matter of fact, I'm really kind of interested in this. I guess you call it Americana right now, but man, there are some amazing folk/bluegrass players out there that I'm knocked out by, you know, Chris Teeley, Eef O'Donovan. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great music out there, man. You know, think about it. Think about when, back in the day, I say that when I was listening to albums and so forth, you could look forward to like who's coming out on the next CTI label thing, or who, you know, I can't wait for the next Metheny album to come out, or whatever, you know, that type of thing. But now there is with indie productions, I can't keep up with all the great players out there. You know, there are so many of them out there. Now, the good thing about it is it seems like we're embracing the good players a lot more, and I think that should be done. I don't think jazz should be that pigeonholed elitist thing that they're talking about.
Yeah,
I appreciate what cats are doing with the jazz these days, but on the same hand, I just hope that we don't lose our crowd by being too overly creative. In other words, if you put any kind of a block up between the crowd and you, then it's kind of defeating the purpose. But luckily, we found that there is a crowd out there that likes to listen to the up-and-coming stuff, man. So good on it, man. Good on it.
Tell me, what is the greatest thing about Kansas City?
Kansas City, depth of talent, man. I've talked with so many people who have come into Kansas City to play, and that's the first thing out of their mouths, man. It's like, this is like one of the best kept secrets in the world, man. This, Kansas City, first of all, the depth of musicians in this town is amazing. But the other cats, the outsiders that come in also, are really knocked out by how cool all the musicians are. I mean, you know, there's not that, huge competition thing like going on in New York City or anything like that. I don't see the competition at all. I know it's probably out there for gigs or whatever, but between players, man, I mean, I can sit down with the players and just have a ball, man, just talk shop or whatever. And then, and, you know, include, and especially with bass players, I know that, you know, we all love each other.
Nice. Let me ask you, what's the greatest thing for you about waking up every day?
Dude, I get to go play music every day. You know, it is a God-given, I feel so lucky. I really do. I get to wake up and play music every day, regardless if it's practice, regardless if it's a gig or rehearsal or whatever. Man, you can't imagine being in the moment and literally letting the music take off inside you and make music out of it rather than just play it. It's a wonderful feeling. I tried to quit playing for a while, and that's when I went into culinary school. And when I was cooking, I missed playing, man. And so I had to, you know, there was an IAJE convention in Boston at the time when I was cooking, and some of my buddies, man, checked me out and said, "What in the hell are you doing cooking? Why aren't you playing?" So that was my turnaround point right there, because, you know, the cooking thing is great, man. It was improv also, but it was also a young man's profession, I found out too. So
right on. Well, yeah, that was clearly your calling, and you went back to it. So
yeah, man. Yeah, and I'm glad I did. Man, I'm going to keep on doing it until I can't do it anymore, which ought to be, what, next week or something like that?
Well, you just actually walked right into my next question, my final question, and I want to ask you this. Of all the years that you've entertained and played for fans in this town, how would you like Kansas City to remember you and your contribution to the Kansas City jazz scene?
It's a real good question, man. You know what, man? What I'd like to be remembered by is that I had fun playing music. That my deal is this, man. I love my friends. I love my music, and I love the cats that I play with and the people that I get to play for. So that's all encompassing, I realize, man. But that's a blessing right there, man.
Yeah, without a doubt. No, that's great. That's a great answer. That's a great, great way to wrap things up. Steve, man, it was great to catch up with you, and I hope that I can shake the glad hand during a live show at some point here soon.
Come around, man. I really need to glad hand you, man, so I can thank you personally. You know?
Absolutely, man. Sounds like a plan, Steve. Let me know, and I'll be out that way.
All right, Joe. Thanks a million, buddy.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Steve for his cool, his gusto, and continual contributions to the Kansas City jazz scene. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can visit the neonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.